Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. State Representative Lori Berman says there are several measures moving through the Florida legislature that attack the rights of women and limits their ability to get access to health care. The Delray Beach Democrat says she's bringing forward her own proactive proposal to assist women in crises who are seeking medical care. Berman talked with our chief legislative news producer, James Call, about the proposals moving through the legislature that stand to impact women.
Lori Berman, you represent House District 86, which is part of Palm Beach County.
Yes, I do. It includes northern Boca Raton, Delray Beach, and parts of Boynton Beach.
And that's a pretty liberal district?
Yes, it is. It's a pretty Democratic district overall.
So, and you're also a former staffer to former Congressman Robert Wexler.
Correct. I worked for the congressman in his first term as a U.S. congressman.
Has he influenced how you think of things?
Yes, certainly. I mean, he was also a state legislator, and I was friends with him when he was a state legislator, and I've always admired the way he spoke up and represented the people of our district.
Among the bills that you've sponsored this session is one for the Equal Rights Amendment for men and women, and also one for a gun control measure.
Correct.
You're not Catholic, are you?
No, I am not.
And you're not Spanish, are you?
No, but I don't think that you have to be Catholic or Spanish to bring a equal rights amendment or a gun control amendment.
Well, I was thinking along the lines of hopeless causes.
Oh, hopeless causes. I think that there are two issues that we need to bring up. They may not pass this session, but I think part of it is we want to get the word out and we want people to know what's going on. The Equal Rights Amendment has been around for a long time, and we still are short three states, and I'm hoping that Florida will become one of those three states. And in terms of the gun control, I think it's less of a hopeless cause than you think. If you remember last year, what the legislature did is it said, if you have your own local laws about guns, we in the states are entitled to preempt it, which has been the law, and now we're going to put a penalty on it. So the end result was that all the localities that had laws had to repeal the laws. And because of that, it showed where the holes were. And I think that at some point, maybe even in the next legislative session, we're going to take a look at that gun law and maybe close some of those holes. I mean, one of my provisions of my law said you can't bring a gun into a daycare center. I don't think anybody in their right mind thinks that you should be able to bring a gun into a daycare center. So I think it's something that we might have a chance on getting that issue looked at maybe in the next session.
And also public buildings. You don't think that someone should bring a gun into a public building?
No, I don't. I don't think that anybody should bring a gun into a public building because there's a lot of – first of all, you have situations – I mean, my property tax appraiser came to me said we don't want it happening where people are bringing money. So why should you bring a gun into a place where there's money transactions going on? And then you've got the issue of people are heated. When you get in the government arena, people come in, they're very upset. You don't want people to have a gun in a situation like that. Right now, the law says you can't bring a gun into a governmental meeting. So if you can't bring it into the meeting, why should you be allowed to bring it into the building where the meetings are going to be taking place?
But the Florida legislature has seemed to be very sympathetic through the years to gun rights. And there is a large segment of our population that believe the Second Amendment is the most important amendment. The right to carry, to bear arms is, you know, supersedes all other rights. In fact, they say it guarantees the First Amendment, the freedom of speech. And how do you get across that hurdle in a state where the legislature historically is very sympathetic?
I'd like to say, first of all, that I agree with the Second Amendment. I'm an attorney, and I do believe in the rule of law. So I agree that we have a right to carry guns. But I don't believe where that you have the unlimited right to carry guns anywhere. And that's where I think that if you look at the statute now, there are 15 places in the state of Florida where guns are prohibited. And I think that that's all my legislation does is add two more places to that list of where guns are prohibited. So I don't think we're trying to get around the Second Amendment at all. I think the Second Amendment allows you to circumscribe some areas where you can't have guns. And I think my law makes good common sense, and that's why I'm advocating for it.
Public buildings covers an awful lot of territory, an awful lot of places. I mean, you wouldn't be able to carry a gun into a library. You wouldn't be able
no,
to carry
– No, my law only is governmental buildings. So you could carry a gun, I believe, under the law into a library still. It would be City Hall and the Capitol, and those are basically what the law – what my law discusses.
Let's talk about the Equal Rights Amendment. It failed here in Florida in the 1970s. I think it was 74, 75, somewhere around there. And it died, almost 40 years ago. It seems to be off the public's agenda. In fact, this morning I did a Wikipedia search on ERA, and it came up as the 33rd item listed. Equal Rights Amendment is 33rd item listed in Wikipedia. And after a list of Malaysian radio stations.
Wow.
After the European Ramblers Association, a list of hiking clubs. I mean, it seems to be one of those items that people just aren't it's not on anyone's agenda. Except yours.
No, I definitely agree with that. I think there is a group of women who it is on their agenda, and I'm not the only one. But I think it is off people's agenda. And I think part of it is that there have been a lot of laws that have been passed that protect women. For instance, we have Lilly Ledbetter, which now says that you can sue for pay discrimination even – and what Lilly Ledbetter had to do with was the timing of when you could sue, because there used to be time of discovery. Now time of discovery starts every time you get your paycheck. So those suits are now more prevalent. But the problem is that Lilly Ledbetter is subject to being repealed. It's just a law that the Congress passed. So I want it to be a constitutional amendment so that we can make sure. I think women have made tremendous strides, and that's why it's come off the radar. But I think if everybody sat back and thought about it and said, my God, if this isn't in the Constitution, all these strides we made could be erased with some legislation. So that's why I'm still advocating for it. And there are people in Congress. There's a woman, Tammy Baldinger, who continually introduces the Equal Rights Amendment to Congress, saying that they should be able to extend the time period so that if three more states did ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, it would become the law. So it's still out there. But as a lawyer, I think it's important for us to get a constitutional amendment on the books, and I will continue to advocate for it.
Because you're afraid. There's the fear. There's the possibility that the rights that have been guaranteed by law could be erased.
Absolutely.
Without it?
Absolutely. And then the other thing that, we still have the situation where women get paid 77 cents to the dollar for men. We don't have – there is Title VII, which is a grounds for suing, but we really don't have equity right now in terms of pay for women. The Equal Rights Amendment would hopefully make sure that women are paid equally, that businesses can't do it. Right now, businesses discriminate and they get away with it. But if it became the law, hopefully they couldn't get away with it.
That 77 cents per hour difference is subject to dispute. I mean,
correct.
I mean,
that's based on
the numbers and
right.
And
I mean, and it goes higher and lower. I mean, for certain minority women, the number's even lower, and it goes higher depending on if you're in a higher paying job. But there's certain. I don't think there's any question that there are instances where women are paid less for the same amount for the exact same work right now.
There's not much sympathy for your position in the legislature, though.
In terms of the Equal Rights Amendment?
Correct.
Yes. No, I'd have to agree with you. But we did have a wonderful rally here in Tallahassee when I introduced the Equal Rights Amendment. We had about 100 women come from all over the state and from all different organizations. We had women from business organizations. We had women from social organizations. We had women from religious organizations. So I think that we just need to get more of a grassroots support. And we're starting on it. We're working on it. And that's the only way that we're ever going to get any more sympathy to the issue here in Florida.
So how do you go about convincing your male colleagues to take this up and give your bill a hearing?
Well, my male colleagues on the Democratic side, most of them are co-sponsors of the Equal Rights Amendment. So it more has to do with the Republican colleagues convincing them to take this bill up. We are out there. I went and met with the chair of the committee. I asked him to take the matter up, and he was somewhat interested. Of course, they did not take the matter up. Also, the people who came here, the 100 people who came here, they also have been going around. They went around the Capitol. They're lobbying. They're sending emails. They're making telephone calls. And that's all we can do. It's like any other bill in the legislature. If you get enough citizen support, then the legislature will feel the pressure to take it up.
You were quoted – well, you were in 2 years in a row, you basically made the same statement. We are confronted by several anti-female legislative proposals that threaten our access to healthy family planning, cancer screening, and birth control. Let's talk about that.
Certainly. I think last year in the Florida legislature, there were 18 bills that were aimed at anti-abortion. This year, there are 10 bills that are anti-abortion bills. And this year I sat – I think three of those 10 have been moving forward and are in committee. I sat on one committee that heard three of those bills. And each one is an effort to limit women's right to access to health care.
So three bills are moving forward in the legislature. Which do you find the most onerous?
It's funny that you asked that question because I've thought about it, which is the most egregious. And I'd have to say in their own way, they're each egregious in a different way. I wouldn't say one in particular is worse than the other. They're all almost equally bad.
Let's start dissecting.
Okay, right, exactly.
Okay. First up is?
All right, let's talk about HB 1327, which is by Representative Plakin. And the bill requires that a woman certify that she's not terminating a pregnancy because of the race or sex of the fetus.
So here we have a person in crisis being asked this question about healthcare decisions. A very personal question. The state is coming into the room and telling the doctor, before you can deliver medical care, you have to ask the patient this question.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, the question is really aimed at certain groups. They're saying you're not terminating your child because of the race of the child. So normally you're looking at the African-American population. They're asking that too. Or you're not doing it because of the sex of the child. And as we all know, in China, there has been an issue about the sex of the child. So you're really targeting certain groups when you ask that question. And I find that very offensive that that's what they're doing. And the other issue is there's no evidence that anybody's doing that in the United States, that anybody is having an abortion because of the sex of the child or because of the race of the child. It's a bill where there's no problem. It's a solution for no problem. So I find it very troubling that we're even looking at this issue right now in the legislature.
So how are you arguing against this particular bill, House Bill 1327, which deals with the sex or race of the fetus?
I mean, certainly we asked the sponsor of the bill, what evidence do you have that people are having abortions based on the sex of the fetus or based on the race of the fetus? He gave us a very he said a statistic having to do with third children more third children being aborted, I think, than were females. But I'm not convinced that that statistic really has any validity. So, you know, we're certainly looking at that. And then some of the, you know, it's been discussed what I said about how it's racial profiling and ethnic profiling to be even asking these questions. So those are the main ways that we're discussing what's wrong with that particular piece of legislation.
So you mentioned that it is a solution for a problem that does not exist, which brings to mind the elections bill that was passed last year. So why doesn't the opposition party just call the majority party out on it that you all are trying to make political statements leading up to an election year?
I mean, I think we do. I think we, you know, when I talked about this bill, when I did my summary of this bill, I said this is a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. I mean, I think we all do call them out. And the elections law, we said the same thing. We asked them, where's the fraud? And the numbers are minuscule. If any, I think, you know, very few cases of potential voter fraud, even in the state of Florida. And I did go to the hearing in Tampa where we talked about the elections law, the United States Senate hearing on the elections law. And it was quite clear in that hearing that this was – there was no evidence of voter fraud, and this was much more a law for voter suppression.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes. Democratic State Representative Lori Berman is pointing out issues that stand to impact women and women's access to health care in the Florida legislature. Now back to the interview.
You're in the opposition party, and the opposition party has these very pointed critiques of proposals put forth by the majority party, but the opposition party does not seem to get any public support. I mean, why is that? Is it your messaging?
We have talked about messaging and how to get our message across better. I think for the most part, a lot of the public doesn't realize what's going on. And people don't know who their state legislators are. They don't realize what state does. They're much more focused on Washington, and they see what's going on in Washington, whereas they don't realize like a lot of the issues that affect them in their day-to-day lives are actually happening right here in the state. You know, certainly we control the money and the budget, and that's something that affects every single person here in the state, and they don't realize it. And the voter suppression law and the abortion laws, and people just don't see it as much. But we do need to get our message across better, definitely.
Is it the media? Is the media doing a poor job in reporting on public policy issue?
I'm not going to indict the media, but I...
No,
I,
feel yeah. free. This is no. public radio. You can't.
No, but I mean, I know I follow a couple newspapers in my local area, the Palm Beach Post and the Sun Sentinel, and I would say they do a very good job. The Sun Sentinel just ran a great article about one of the insurance bills that we passed just this year. So I think they're doing a good job, but I think sometimes people turn off those issues, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and newspaper readership is down. Newspaper circulation is down, especially since the recession started. So it seems to be that there is a disconnect when you look at the polling results, and then you look at proposals that move through the Florida legislature. There seems to be a disconnect between the legislature and what the people believe, or what the people say they believe. But then the results of the elections are the results of the elections, which produces the legislature, which is the collective will of the people. And it's just someone who observes it, it's just very hard to put it together.
Right. And I think a part of it is gerrymandering. And that's really where we have some of the disconnect that we have, because I agree with you. The vast majority of people don't agree with a lot of the legislation that's coming down from the legislature. But what you do have is you have gerrymandering. So you get these districts that are very Republican or very Democratic, and then you get these people from the far right and the far left who end up representing those districts, because a lot of times the election is decided just based on the primary. So if you don't have to be part of a general election, and myself included, and I won in a primary, I'm not indicting the system for that, but that's what happens sometimes. So if you only are part of a primary, you can pander to the people who are the ones who vote in the primary, who are more the party activists. So who are the people more on the far right or the far left very often? And it's because of that we get people who have more extreme views, I think, than the general populace in the state of Florida.
And talking about extreme views, you have taken on two issues which are very emotional issues, and which people take extreme views on: gun control and abortion rights. Let's talk about the second abortion bill.
Correct. Okay. And I just want to say, when you talk about extreme views, I don't consider my viewpoints extremist. On the pieces of legislation that I have filed, I think they're well thought out, and that the general populace in the state of Florida, if they would analyze and look at my laws, I think that the general populace would support it. I have a good friend who leans Republican, and I told her about all my pieces of legislation, and she said to me, I would support every one of those pieces of legislation.
I did not mean to imply that you have an extreme view.
Right, okay.
I'm saying that you are tackling issues which the general population tends to, the spectrum seems to be played out on the extremes.
Okay, that's fine. And I understand that. So we can move on to the second abortion bill, which is HB 839. And that prohibits an abortion after 20 weeks because of purported fetal pain. I argued strongly against this bill that I think it's unconstitutional and violates Roe v. Wade. If you look at Roe v. Wade, they talk about having an abortion up to viability of the fetus. So if you change viability to fetal pain, you're changing the standard of Roe v. Wade, and I think it's clearly unconstitutional. And I also argued strongly against this bill that I don't believe that there's scientific evidence to show that fetal pain – the bill says that fetal pain occurs at 20 weeks, and I don't believe there's any – there's enough scientific evidence to show that at this point.
So you're using a scientific argument with this bill?
Well, I use both. A, it's unconstitutional, and B, a scientific argument that there isn't enough evidence to show that there's fetal pain at 20 weeks.
Okay. So when you think about abortion and abortion rights, what type of argument do you make for it?
I mean, okay, there's a couple different things. First of all, nobody favors abortion. Nobody in the Democratic Party wants to see someone have an abortion. That's not something – I'm happy that I never had to make that choice and that no one in my family that I know of has ever had to make that choice. It's a horrible decision. But the main thing I think about is that it's my body and I should be able to make that choice. Someone else, the government, should not be involved in that choice. It should be a decision between myself, my doctor, my clergy, if that's who I want to include in that decision, my family, not the government. And that's really where I come down on abortion. It's not something that I think is great. I don't think people should be using it as a birth control method. Unfortunately, sometimes that happens. But I think that it should be my choice and not the choice of the government.
So you make the freedom argument that if a person does not have control of their body, then they are not truly free.
Correct. And that's the argument in Roe v. Wade. It's a privacy argument that you're entitled to have privacy with your own body.
Now, people on the other side make a religious argument. Have you ever tried to discuss it on spiritual terms?
Not really, but I'm a strong believer in separation of church and state. So, I'm also strongly religious, and I think that's important, but I don't think that the government should be imposing any religious beliefs upon people.
And, yeah. And the third bill.
Okay. So the third bill is HB 277. And it has a lot – it's what they call a TARP bill. It's targeted against abortion providers. So it has a lot of different parts to it. One part says that a woman has to wait 24 hours before she can have an abortion. Another says that the doctors who provide the abortions have to have 3 hours a year training in ethics. And another provision limits ownership of the abortion clinics to doctors who receive training in abortion-related procedures during their residencies. So it's basically targeted against making it harder for doctors to do abortions.
3 hours of ethical training?
Correct. And if you look at the laws right now in Florida, doctors don't have to have any ethical training. But now they're going to single out this one group, and they're going to have to do 3 hours of ethical training just because they are abortion providers.
What do you think the chances of any of these bills passing are?
We have a very strong Republican-dominated legislature, and there is a good chance that these bills could pass. I mean, last year we passed five really discouraging anti-abortion bills. So there's always a shot that these bills could pass.
Okay, so there's a shot. So you're also taking up women's health issues, advocating on behalf of women's health issues. And tell us about what you're doing in that area.
Okay, great. I'm really excited this year. We filed a proactive piece of legislation having to do with women's health issues. It's called the Pregnancy Confidentiality Act. And basically what it says is that women who go to pregnancy resource centers, which are often referred to as crisis pregnancy centers right now, those centers are not required to have doctors or nurses on staff. And because of that, they are not required to comply with the federal mandates on confidentiality of information, otherwise known as HIPAA. So any information that you give as a woman in those centers is not protected. They can take the information, share it with your neighbors, share it with your clergy, share it with anyone that they want to. So my bill says if you go to one of those centers, that all the information that you give them has to remain confidential. And it's one of the first times we've actually done something proactive in a while. So I'm really excited about this piece of legislation.
So why is it important?
It's important to protect the confidentiality rights of women who are in crisis, who are pregnant and who are, you know, unsure about what to do. And then they go to these centers and they share information and it could be spread anywhere. So we want to make sure that their rights are protected when they go to these centers to seek information about their pregnancy.
One of the other things I want to talk to you about is the politics of the Florida legislature. And that is that you are part of a, for lack of a better term, a super minority. You're outnumbered. You only have 39 members in a 120 member body. And for instance, so you sacrifice your time. You come up here from South Florida. First, you raise the money to campaign. Then you campaign. Then you take out, 10 straight weeks in the spring and up to like 2 weeks every other month to be here in Tallahassee. And then it's very hard for you, because you're part of the minority party, to even get your proposals heard in committee. So why? Why do you make this decision and sacrifice your time and energy? It's in such an effort that has to be at times feel depressingly futile.
There's no disagreement here. It's discouraging being in a super minority, and it's very hard. It does sometimes feel like you're banging your head against the wall. There's a couple different factors. When I decided to run, we weren't as much of a super minority. We had over one-third control. So there, when you have one-third control, you have some procedural power. So I didn't anticipate that. I also was very hopeful that we would have a Democratic governor, which unfortunately did not come to be. So that was sort of my motivation behind running. Since I've been here and I have to get up every morning and come to the Capitol and fight the good fight, I think I know that I'm here on behalf of my constituents. And I know when I go home, my constituents always come up to me and say, thank you for doing this. We're so happy that you're up there, that your voice is there. And they know that all we have is our voice. And so they appreciate that we're there and we're advocating for them. And then the other thing that really motivates me even more so is going home and making a difference at home. And that's really where I focus on and try and make things better for my constituents. I held a job fair in November. We had over 30 employers. We had 800 people show up looking for jobs. I'm hopeful that some of those people were, we did track it. It was very difficult to track and see if anybody got specific jobs, but I'm hopeful that people got jobs. I help my constituents with issues that they have having to do with the state. And I really feel like that's where we get our reward, is knowing that we're helping our constituents at home. But it is difficult when we're up here. But I think it's important that we have our voices heard, and that's all we can do. And that's what we do up here, mostly in the minority party.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I just want to say that I'm grateful and honored to have this responsibility and this honor. And I think it's really a wonderful thing that Florida does have a citizen legislature. And that's part of why you come up here, and that you are a part of it, even if it means that your bills may not get through and some of your ideas may not get to where you want. But I think as long as we can keep advocating, and I think as long as the people pay attention and start addressing the issues. I mean, we have Occupy Tallahassee right now. We have things going on, and I think that there are changes happening. And I'm hopeful that with the redistricting, we'll have a little more power and a little more balance of power in the next legislative session.
Representative Lori Berman, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to our guests, State Representative Lori Berman of Delray Beach and our Chief Legislative News Producer, James Call. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our senior producer is Regan McCarthy, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.